Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Craig had to step away for a minute, and so I'll fill in until he gets back. Glenn, you guys were talking about Kiev, right? Or are you there, Glenn? Hello? All right. Give me one second here. I got to pull up my notes. Unexpected radio. It's always fun. Are you back, Craig?
Hello. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I want to turn our attention now to the U.S. Navy. Off the coast of China, the U.S. Navy has accused the Chinese of a dangerous and reckless encounter. They claim that a Chinese aircraft flew within, some 30 feet of a U.S. aircraft. It was anti-submarine aircraft, as I understand it, as according to the U.S. Navy. According to the Chinese, it was actually a spy aircraft. And the United States is demanding that China stop trying to spy on America's spy aircraft. The Chinese are, of course, saying, why don't you just stop spying on us, and then we won't have to do that. China's defense minister actually denied the allegations that its fighter jet conducted a dangerous intercept. The defense minister's spokesman, Yong Yuzhong, called the U.S. accusations groundless. Yong said that the Chinese pilot conducted operations that were professional and that the Chinese jet kept a safe distance from the U.S. planes. Yong described the Chinese flights as routine identification and verification. Actually, these flights were taking place in the air defense zone surrounding China. And an air defense zone is actually much smaller than the one around the United States. Pentagon Press Secretary Rear Admiral John Kirby gave a different account on Friday, saying that the encounter took place 135 miles off of China's Hainan Island. Now, 135 miles off would mean that this is much closer to China than the United States would allow any foreign military plane to fly within the United States coastline. We call it, in the United States, it's a 200-mile air defense identification zone, and we would have a conniption fit in the United States, and yet we think that it's appropriate for us to do this against China. The provocateur here is clearly the United States, and that they made several close passes by a Navy P-8 Poseidon plane, which is an anti-submarine plane, coming within 30 feet of it. He said that the Chinese jets did a barrel roll maneuver over the top of the Poseidon and also passed across the nose of the Navy plane, exposing the belly of the aircraft as a provocative move to show that it was armed. That's great. Yeah, that's the nature of military aircraft. They actually carry arms. That's the purpose of the military, in case you hadn't checked. Kirby said that the Chinese jet maneuvering speed posed a risk of safety to the U.S. crew and was inconsistent with customary international law. It's actually inconsistent with customary international law to go spy on everybody in the world, which is what the United States is doing, particularly when you're flying within 135 miles of a country's coastline. Kirby went on to say it's unprofessional, it's unsafe, and that the U.S. Navy has lodged a protest. The Chinese statement also said that the P-3 Orion, an anti-submarine surveillance aircraft, flew alongside the Poseidon, and the Pentagon didn't mention the second aircraft. Now, the reason that this is important, because the United States has now dispatched another aircraft carrier to confront China. So here we are. We're trying to talk ourselves into a war with Russia. We're now trying to provoke China into a war, and we want to start bombing Syria after we broke Iraq. You know, look at what we have done. I mean, look at the mess of Libya, the mess of Egypt, the mess of Pakistan, the mess of Iraq, the mess of Afghanistan, the mess in Syria. I mean, haven't we made enough disasters around the world? We don't need to go provoke another fight. This next story is really painful. And it would normally not even make the lead story on any newspaper. but it ought to be. The dateline is Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic. It begins, he was a familiar figure to the boys who work along the oceanfront promenade. The boys say that he gave them money to perform sexual acts. They called him the Italian because he spoke Spanish with an Italian accent. It was only after he was spirited out of the country, the boys say, and his picture was slashed all over the local news media, that they learned his real identity. This man who was bribing young boys to perform sexual acts on him was an archbishop, Joseph Walonski. He was the Vatican's ambassador to the Dominican Republic. Quote, he definitely seduced me with money, said Francis Aquino Anuri, who says he was 14 when the man he met, Shining Shoes, began offering him increasingly larger sums for sexual acts. I felt very bad. I knew it wasn't right, but I needed the money. The case is the first time that a top Vatican ambassador who serves as a personal envoy of the Pope has been accused of sexual abuse of minors. It has sent a shockwave through the Vatican and two predominantly Catholic countries that have only begun to grapple with clergy sexual abuse, the Dominican Republic and Poland, where Mr. Wasłowski was ordained by the Polish prelate, who later became Pope John Paul II. Oh my. It has also created a test for Pope Francis. It's no test. If it was a test, he's already failed it. This was the Pope that says, we're not going to tolerate this. We're going to have a completely different approach. We're going to hold them accountable. Yeah, right. He's the one that recalled him. He was working directly for the Pope. And the Pope took him out of the country so that he would not stand trial in the Dominican Republic. He'd be in jail now in the Dominican Republic, engaged in a trial for pedophilia. And multiple counts, some unbelievably reprehensible. But no, he's off lollygagging, walking the streets of Italy because of Pope Francis, who is nothing but a con man. Pope Francis, who called child sex abuse such an ugly crime and pledged to move the Roman Catholic Church into an era of zero tolerance, did exactly the opposite. For priests and bishops who have violated children, he told reporters in May, there are no privileges, and yet he provided this man with all of the privileges the Roman Catholic Church could provide to a known pedophile. Mr. Wasłowski had already faced the harshest possible penalty under the church's canon law, short of excommunication. He was defrocked by the Vatican. Can you imagine that? Here's a man that engaged in illegal pedophilia over and over and over again, corrupting children as young as 10 and 12 years old. And the Vatican has penalized him. Yes, they've defrocked him. The horror of it all. What a farce. But far from settling the matter, the Vatican has stirred an outcry because it helped Mr. Wasłowski avoid criminal prosecution and a possible jail sentence, not possible, guaranteed, in the Dominican Republic. The church failed to inform the local authorities of the evidence against him, and they knew for certain that he was engaged in pedophilia, and then secretly recalled him to Rome last year before he could be investigated, and then invoked diplomatic immunity for Mr. Wasłowski so that he could not face trial in the Dominican Republic. The Roman Catholic Church, as a result of continuing to aid and abet its clergy, and this is an archbishop, corrupting children through acts of pedophilia, is amongst the most reprehensible, morally corrupt, criminal organizations in the world. The church continues to be reluctant to report people suspected of abuse to local authorities or to allow them to face justice in secular courts. The Vatican says that because Mr. Wesolowski was a member of its diplomatic corps and a citizen of the Holy See, the case would be handled in Rome. From the pure standpoint of justice, he should have been tried in the country where these acts took place, because the conditions for trying him will not be the same elsewhere, the dean of the Faculty of Law for the University of Santo Domingo said. Yeah, the fact of the matter is that if you're claiming diplomatic immunity, then you're claiming that it's your business, Pope, to abuse little children. Because diplomatic immunity is really for those who are conducting the business of one country in another country. So you're saying that the Catholic Church is a country, that it's a nation, that it's a political entity. And this man, as he was conducting his business, was an ambassador of you, Pope Francis, has immunity from abusing sexually young boys. That's the position you're taking, Francis. The Vatican spokesperson, this guy's a real bum, Reverend Federico Lombardi, I hope they have a nice cell for him already prepared in hell, I'm sure they do, did not say when Wesolowski's trial would start. And he is representing, or even who is representing, the former politician, the archbishop, or whether he is at liberty or he is awaiting trial. Under Vatican law, sexual abuse charges can bring a maximum of 12 years in prison. Yeah, you're locked in the Vatican. Oh, boy. We will return to this story, and Shattering Myths continues after the break. A Dominican bishop, Victor Masales, visiting Rome in late June, said that he was surprised to see Mr. Wesolowski strolling the Villa della Scofra in the city's picturesque ancient center. Guess what? He's not in jail. Francis called him back. Let him go. It's okay to molest little boys in Catholicism. You get diplomatic immunity because this church, masquerading as a country, sanctions such stuff. And this new pope that says, oh, it's terrible, we're just not going to tolerate it anymore, brought him right on back. Removed him from the Dominican Republic so he would not stand trial for the most heinous of crimes. The waterfront promenade in the Dominican capital is dominated by a really hideous 50-foot monument to the 16th century Spanish Friar Antonio de Monstinos, a Catholic, of course, dressed in robes and preaching a fiery sermon. It was at the heel of this Catholic colossus that Mr. Aquino said that he was most often molested by the archbishop. Mr. Aquino, whose family is originally from Haiti, left school in the eighth grade. He earns $1.50 on a typical weekday by shining shoes. Not $1.50 per shoe shine, $1.50 over the course of the full day. But he said that the man gave him more than $10 the first time they met, back in 2010, 4 years ago, to shine his shoes and then get naked while the archbishop watched. The man returned often over the next 6 weeks, Mr. Aquino said, but gradually the man wanted more. giving him about 25 to as much as 125 to perform sexual acts. He would then provide him sneakers and a watch as the type of sexual acts increased. It wasn't just nakedness anymore. They met on and off over 3 years. There's a mix of shame and anger among the shoeshine boys. Darwin Quinvedo, who is now just 14, said haltingly with downcast eyes that when he was 11, the archbishop gave him more than $25 to watch him masturbate. He said he felt scared, never did it again. The shoeshine boys, those young men without an education, poor, unlearned, illiterate, have greater moral backbone, a greater sense of right and wrong than does the Catholic archbishop or the Roman Catholic pope. When he learned much later of the man's identity, Darwin, 11 years old at the time, now 14, said he thought to himself, what kind of a man who is a priest does these things, does kinds of things like this? Good question, isn't it? The promenade is a popular stretch for tourists and joggers, but it's also frequented by those seeking children and young men for sex. He wasn't interested in me, said Robin Quillo Quinton, who was 23. He says, I was way too old for him. He liked the really young ones. I warned the younger kids, don't go near him. But the money he offered, money donated by the local community, tempted them. Two United Nations panels in Geneva, and we've covered this, examined the church's record on child abuse and condemned the Vatican earlier this year for its handling of these cases. One day last year, Nuria Perea, a prominent television journalist, received a tip that the papal ambassador drank beer many afternoons at the waterfront and then went off in search of young boys. Miss Piera sent a video crew to surreptitiously film the ambassador, the archbishop. She said in an interview with CDN, the crew shot some video of him drinking alone and then walking the promenade. But he said that the archbishop noticed their presence and then approached them, smacking his head against their car, and asked them, why are you following me? We'll resume this story in a moment. So after that encounter, where the archbishop had a conniption fit and yelled at the media for following him, the media says that he no longer searched the waterfront for adolescent boys to have sex with. Archbishop Wesolowski began sending a young Dominican church deacon to procure children for him. Law enforcement's authority in the Dominican Republic affirm. The deacon, Francisco Javier Osi Reyes, was arrested by the police on June 24th of last year, well over a year ago now. He was accused of solicitation of minors and taken to jail. But no one came to bail him out. Oh, no, the archbishop. No, he sent this young bishop out to find young boys for him to molest. But no, he was himself was unwilling to bail his accomplice out. And so the deacon sent an anguish letter dated July 2nd to the archbishop to be delivered to him by hand at his office. The letter reads, we have offended God and the church the letter said, by sexually abusing children and adolescents for crumbs of money. The deacon wrote that he had agreed to find child victims for the archbishop so that your sexual appetite could be satisfied. But now he was asking God for forgiveness. Hopefully you will consider asking God for help and walk away from this evil disease of continuing to sexually abuse innocent children. That letter, which has been obtained by the New York Times, was provided by the Dominican Justice Ministry, and it is official. We'll return to this story in a moment. We have Robert calling in from Torrance, California, that has a question on birthdays. Hello, Robert.
Hello, Yada. Hi.
Hi. Go ahead.
My question was, what elements of the typical birthday celebration are to be avoided? I remember reading a PDF on what attached to one of the messages on the forum, which mentioned, of course, the lit candles, believed to carry wishes to pagan gods on the flames. I'm sure that's out. What about the cake itself?
I ignore all of it. There are so many meaningful things to criticize that if you go and you trivialize the accusations against religion, I think you make a mockery of the things that are important. So this might surprise you, but I don't see any issue whatsoever about somebody celebrating one's birthday. Yes, I know that birthday celebrations go back to ancient Babylon. So what? This is what I think. I think that when you have as your holiest day on your religious calendar, Easter, named after Ishtar, the mother of God, the queen of heaven of the Babylonian religion, and that it is designed to replace Passover, I think that's a big issue. And I think that we ought to expose it and we ought to condemn it ruthlessly, boldly, bluntly. When you have this notion of Christmas, which is 9 months after Easter and the impregnation of the Mother of God and the Queen of Heaven on Easter Sunday, and you give birth to the Son of the Sun on the winter solstice in keeping with the Babylonian religion, and you have your God born on that date, that is repulsive. And I think we ought to expose it and condemn it. When it comes to All Hallows Eve and the pagan celebration of ghosts and goblins that was so prominent in Rome, we ought to expose it and condemn it. But when it comes to something as innocuous as birthdays, I think we actually diminish the attack, the meaning, the merit of the attack on Christmas and Easter by getting to be overly concerned about something that small. Now, I will tell you, Robert, that my view on these things is different than some. I view the Torah as a book of instructions, which is what Torah means, that guide us to the covenant, that introduce us to Yahweh, that provide directions so that we answer Yah's invitations to meet with him 7 times a year, and that we come to know and understand his plan and respond to it. I think that when we move from the Torah providing those kinds of that kind of fatherly advice to it's a strict list of laws that have to be obeyed, and that we find additional things to obey, I think we move in the wrong direction. So, yes, you could make the argument that there's a difference in religion between a wax candle and beeswax and what beeswax represented and and an oil lamp with olive oil providing the light. One is Torah symbolism of the spirit and of being enlightened and of eternal life. of cleansing, of nurturing, and all of those kinds of things, and the other is a counterfeit. Candles used in religion, in any religious ceremony, are a counterfeit of God's intended symbolism. And so I'd say we ought to limit our concerns to religious context. Unless you're being religious at a birthday party, I wouldn't worry about it. That's a long answer, but that's how I view it. And I can tell you there's a lot of people that have a much harsher view of these things than I do. And I say, okay, that's fine. And I just said, since you asked me the question, I'm going to answer your question. Normally, I would say, if somebody were to write me and says, I'm not going to observe birthdays because of their heritage in a pagan culture, I'd say, okay, that's fine. Makes you happy, that's fine. If they ask me, what do I think? I'm going to tell them I think it's irrelevant. What do you think, Robert?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Worry about the real big things.
Worry about the big things. You know, you want to worry about something, worry about coming to understand the covenant, its terms and conditions, and responding to Yahweh, enjoying the benefits of being liberated by the covenant so that you don't have to worry about sweat the little things, and also so that you can share the big picture with those you love. And I was working out this morning, and I really have a tough time working out on a stair climber or that sort of thing, because you know you've got to be on it 20 or 30 minutes to do any good. And that's 20 or 30 minutes, my mind isn't functioning, and it drives me crazy. So this morning I was almost always I'll take something over there to read. This morning I was reading the last half of Matthew. And it was one of the parables was really touching. It was Yahushua was telling about how, you know, it was a vineyard owner, and he early in the day he offered one denarius to anybody that would work in the vineyard during the day, and a bunch of people came and they did. And then he went and throughout the day went back into the community and said, "Hey, if you're not doing anything, I'll pay to work in my vineyard." And some people showed up and was, you know, an hour before sunset. And then, you know, the owner of the vineyard went and paid a full denarius to those who had only worked an hour, and paid them first, and then worked on down the line. And lastly, he paid those who had come at the beginning of the day. He paid them exactly what he had offered, what he'd promised, one denarius. And so they had a conniption fit. How could we have worked all day? And you know, the rest of you only worked an hour. And what the message is, that when you're dealing with what our Heavenly Father has to give us, the more children that are invited in, even if they make it in at the last moment of the last possible day, you know, the last day, Yom Kippurim, 5 days before the end of the tribulation, and that's when they're reconciled, they're just our brothers and sisters. They inherit everything that we inherit. And so everything, remember, that we can do, that encourages more people to be liberated by, enriched by, deployed by, engaged in the covenant. That stuff's important. And I'd focus on that, and I'd not sweat the little stuff. Okay with you?
Sure is.
All right. You have any other questions?
Speaking of Yom Kippurim and its ultimate fulfillment, I noticed that it mentions that Yahweh will appear in his undiminished form on that day.
Less diminished. Less diminished. The totality of Yahweh would still incinerate the earth if he were to show up. So he's just going to be a lot less diminished. He's going to show up, they say, like a constellation of stars. So that's, it's by magnitudes beyond our comprehension how much less diminished that is than the corporeal version. You know, the corporeal version showed up last time and so diminished he was in human form. Massively diminished to set apart. This time, he's going to be a lot, by magnitudes of billions of times less diminished. But I still don't think it's the totality of Yahweh is not going to be here. That doesn't seem possible to me.
perhaps a constellation of stars that spells out Yod-Heh-Wah-Heh?
I don't know. I don't know. But, you know, he's going to camp out with us here for 1,000 years, between year 6,000 Yah and year 7,000 Yah. He's going to reside in Jerusalem. Going to be a marvelous experience for all of us. There will be several entities that will be enjoying this time. One of them are going to be spirits. In fact, in that same concluding part of Matanyahu that I was reading, it talked about the Pharisees and the like were trying to, and lawyers were trying to trip Yosha up on who was going to claim a wife. Various brothers married this same woman and died, and the next one married, and it's just, you know, in eternity, you know, you're going to be spirits like the Malach. So there's going to be a group of us there who were either harvested before the tribulation, or those who passed away in the covenant prior to the tribulation. We're going to be spirits, and then there'll be the mortals who are the last in. Their inheritance is the same as ours, but they will actually live here and camping out with Yahweh for that 1,000 years. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a discussion with Robert. Robert Torrance brings back memories to me for about 10 years. I lived just past Torrance. First in Redondo Beach after I graduated from the University of Spoiled Children, USC, and then moved to the top of the Palos Verdes Peninsula, and then ultimately built a house right there on the bluff overlooking the ocean in Palos Verdes. So I'm sure you know all of that area pretty well. What I wanted to just end this the birthday issue with is the realization that because you asked me my personal situation, I celebrate my wife's birthday. It makes her happy when I do, and it makes her unhappy when I don't. And my life is just so much better when my wife is happy, and it's really not very good when my wife is not happy. My own birthday I do not celebrate, and I am happiest when it is ignored. I don't like attention paid to me. I want to be a wallflower, just... I don't tell anybody about my birthday, and I specifically ask all those that I'm closest to, please don't do anything for my birthday. I'm happiest when it's ignored. So that kind of is my view towards the whole thing. Any other questions, or would you want us to move back to this rather repulsive story about Roman Catholicism in the Dominican Republic?
Go back to the story.
Okay, well, you're welcome to chime in at any time, and I'm happy to ask, particularly as we move into the next hour, where all of it is devoted to coming to know Yahweh better. You're more than welcome to hang on, and we can discuss the issues that arise in that hour together. What's so amazing here in this story is that over a year ago, the Roman Catholic Church knew, in fact, Pope Francis knew that he had a pedophile, a practicing pedophile, working directly for him in the Dominican Republic, who was an archbishop. Because, you see, a copy of that letter was hand-carried to Pope Francis. The deacon not only sent copies of the letter to Cardinal Jesus Rodriguez, the head of the Roman Catholic Church in the Dominican Republic, but as well to others. And then the cardinal himself, Cardinal Jesus Rodriguez, personally carried the letter to the Vatican, where he met directly with Pope Francis, according to interviews with the Dominican authorities. Francis knew that this was a practicing pedophile who was using the church to acquire and then pay children to abuse. And yet, on August 21st last year, the moment Pope Francis was informed that his ambassador to the Dominican Republic, the archbishop, was a practicing pedophile, the Pope secretly whisked him back to Rome. 6 days later, the Cardinal called the ambassador, the Archbishop a great friend and a promoter of peace, even though he knew he was a sexual pervert. Neither the Cardinal nor other church officials reported the allegations to local authorities. The country's Attorney General said that he first learned about the allegations against the Archbishop from television reports which were broadcast early in September, including a child asserting that he had been abused by the Archbishop. The district attorney, Mrs. Reynoso, said that her investigations had identified four children aged 12 through 17, and we know one was as young as 11, with whom the Catholic Archbishop had sexual contact, all of which are minors, all of which is a very single crime, serious crime. One alone would be sufficient for him to spend the rest of his life in prison. But here's the saddest of all the stories. The oldest was a 17-year-old boy who had epilepsy. And the Archbishop gave him medicine for his condition in exchange for performing sexual acts. He began abusing this boy with epilepsy when he was just 13 years old. This is the man who walks free today. This is the Archbishop of the Roman Catholic Church. This is the man that Pope Francis rescued and is protecting. He began abusing a 13-year-old boy with epilepsy and traded sexual favors for medication. If you were Roman Catholic, you disgust me. If you allow your children to have meetings with and to be near Roman Catholic priests, you're guilty.